And we want to remember that Moses is looking forward the millennium when this nation of Israel, this one-third that comes through the tribulation, will be a new creation. Tonight we're going to look into verses 12 to 17. And I want you to notice we're going to be looking into Benjamin and to Joseph. We'll notice on the map here, Benjamin right down here, Ephraim and Manasseh were Joseph's sons. We know Joseph didn't inherit, but his two sons did. You'll notice this is all in the middle, in the very center of Israel. Remember, Rachel was their mother, was Joseph and Benjamin's mother. Jacob loved her, and God honored her, and he blessed her children. Let's read verses 12, 17. And of Benjamin he said, the beloved of the Lord shall dwell in safety by him, and the Lord shall cover him all the day long, and he shall dwell between his shoulders. And of Joseph he said, blessed of the Lord be his land, for the precious things of heaven, for the dew and for the deep that coucheth beneath, and for the precious fruits brought forth by the sun, and for the precious things brought forth by the moon, and for the chief things of the ancient mountains, and for the precious things of the lasting hills, and for the precious things of the earth and the fullness thereof, and for the good, and for the goodwill of him that dwelt in the bush, let the blessing come upon the head of Joseph, and upon the top of the head of him that was separated from his brethren. His glory is like the firstling of his bullock, and his horns are like the horns of a unicorn. And with them he shall push the people together to the ends of the earth. And they are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and they are the 1,000 of Manasseh. Benjamin's name means son of my right hand. And I would like us to go over to Genesis 49. I'd like to just read the blessing that Jacob gave each one of these two sons, Benjamin and Joseph. And we won't compare, but I'll let you, we'll read them, and then we'll read. We just read what we read in Deuteronomy. And as the Lord, as you meditate on it, I know the Lord will give you what he wants you to have in the comparison of the two prophecies. Benjamin is in verse 27 of chapter 49 of Genesis. Mom gave some good notes when she was giving out Genesis regarding these scriptures. In verse 27, Benjamin shall raven as a wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. Then the prophecy that Jacob gave to Joseph is in verse 22. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him. But his bough abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. Even by the God of thy father, who shall help thee, and by the Almighty, who shall bless thee with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breasts and of the womb, the blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of my progenitor, under the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. We read in Deuteronomy 33:16 again how Joseph was separated from his brethren. We're going to look at Benjamin first. Benjamin in Genesis is mentioned after Joseph. Here, Benjamin is mentioned before Joseph. And as we mentioned earlier, both of these sons were born of Rachel, who Jacob loved. He loved Rachel. Rachel wanted to be fruitful, but the Lord closed up her womb and caused Leah and the handmaid to have all the sons. But God remembered Rachel. This beloved here, and of Benjamin he said, the beloved of the Lord shall dwell in safety. This beloved speaks of the remnant, the one-third that will be brought through the tribulation. They will dwell in safety. Now remember, this is in the millennium. Moses is looking forward to the millennium. This remnant will dwell in safety. This word dwell means to lay oneself down. In order for them to feel free to lay themselves down, they were to be in safety. Safety here means refuge. I think of the cities of refuge. That's where the manslayer, he fled to find refuge. Well, this remnant is going to find refuge in Jesus Christ. Let's look at Isaiah 4. Isaiah 4 and the second verse. In that day, and we know that day is yet future, in that day shall the branch of the Lord be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth shall be excellent and comely for them that are escaped Israel. And it shall come to pass that he that is left, and that is this one-third in Zion, and he that remaineth in Jerusalem shall be called holy, even every one that is written among the living in Jerusalem. When the Lord shall have washed away the filth or the sin of the daughters of Zion, and shall have purged the blood of Jerusalem from the midst thereof by the spirit of judgment and by the spirit of burning. And the Lord will create upon every dwelling place of Mount Zion and upon her assemblies a cloud and smoke by day and the shining of a flame, flaming fire by night. For upon all the glory shall be a defense. This defense is a canopy over this third. And there shall be a tabernacle or a pavilion for a shadow in the daytime from the heat, and for a place of refuge, and for a covert or protection from storm and from rain. See how God is going to protect this nation? He is going to be their refuge. Let's turn to Isaiah 31:5. Isaiah 31:5, as birds flying, so will the Lord of hosts, and we know this is Jehovah to Sabaoth, defend Jerusalem. Defending also, he will deliver it, and passing over, he will preserve it. This is what he's going to do for this one-third, because they will have been brought through the fire, and they will be a new creation. It says, and the Lord shall cover him all the day long, and he shall dwell between his shoulders. This nation is going to dwell between the shoulders of Jehovah. Now think about the shoulders for a minute. The shoulders encompass the heart, the bones that's all connected, the breastbone, the collarbone, the shoulders, they all, and even the scapula on the back, the shoulder blades, they're all connected because they're protecting a vital organ, that heart. Well, this is what this one-third is going to be like. They're going to be protected, and he shall dwell between Jehovah's shoulders. In the Hebrew, this reads, Benjamin shall dwell between Jehovah's shoulders, that is, between the mountains sacred to him. Those mountains sacred to him are Mount Zion and Mount Moriah. Now, as we look at our map, this map is kind of hard to see, but Jerusalem is right on the border between Judah and Benjamin. I think it's better in the back of your Bibles. But Jerusalem sits both in the inheritance of Judah and Benjamin. Mount Zion sits in Judah, and Mount Moriah in Benjamin. So there is a valley between Mount Zion and Mount Moriah, and that's where this one-third is going to dwell. They're going to be protected. Let's look at 1 Chronicles 11. I would like to just touch on Zion, Mount Zion and Mount Moriah, just for a little bit, because these were very important places. We know Mount Moriah is where the temple, the millennial temple, is going to be built. Presently, the Dome of the Rock, the Muslims' Dome of the Rock, is sitting on that Mount Moriah. We know the Lord's going to remove that so that the temple can be built there. But we're going to look at Zion first. In verse 4 of chapter 11 of 1 Chronicles, and David and all Israel went to Jerusalem, which is Jebus, where the Jebusites were, the inhabitants of the land. And the inhabitants of Jebus said to David, thou shalt not come hither. Nevertheless, David took the castle of Zion, which is the city of David. And David said, whomsoever smiteth the Jebusite first shall be chief and captain. So Joab, the son of Zeruiah, went first up and was chief. And David dwelt in the castle. Therefore they called it the city of David. Let's turn to 2 Chronicles 5. 2 Chronicles 5:2. Then Solomon assembled the elders of Israel and all the heads of the tribes of the chief of the fathers of the children of Israel unto Jerusalem to bring up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord out of the city of David, which is Zion. Zion was the ancient stronghold, and Zion is in the southwest eminence in Jerusalem, which is called, as we read, the city of David. Now let's turn to Zechariah 8. Now this is speaking of Zion after the 7 years tribulation. Zechariah 8, and we'll begin with the second verse. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I was jealous for Zion with great jealousy, and I was jealous for her with great fury. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I am returned unto Zion, and this is after the 7 years of tribulation, and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. Thus saith, and this is what it's going to be like, thus saith the Lord of hosts, there shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for every age. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. It's going to be a safe city because God's going to be the one protecting. This will be in the millennium. There will be no more war because God will have taken care of all the nations. Now let's look at Mount Moriah for a moment. The first place we see Mount Moriah, we see the land of Moriah back in Genesis 22. Genesis 22, and we'll begin with the first verse. And it came to pass after these things that God did try Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Behold. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains, which I will tell thee of. This is where Abraham was to slay Isaac. Mount Moriah. Now let's look at 2 Chronicles 3:1. You see, this is where Solomon built his temple. 2 Chronicles 3:1. Then Solomon began to build the house of the Lord at Jerusalem in Mount Moriah, where the Lord appeared unto David his father in the place that David had prepared in the threshing floor of Onan the Jebusite. This was a particular place that David chose. God ordained David to choose this place. Let's look at 1 Chronicles 21. This is also found in 2 Samuel 24. I would like to begin with the 15th verse. David, he numbered the people, and God had not told him to do this. And God was very put out with David. Let's begin with the 15th verse of 1 Chronicles 21. And God sent an angel unto Jerusalem. Well, you can read there in verses 8 to 14 how God gave David the choice of his punishment. And this is what David chose. He left it in God's hand. In verse 15, and God sent an angel unto Jerusalem to destroy it. And as he was destroying, the Lord beheld, and he repented of the evil, and said to the angel that destroyed it, It is enough. Stay now thine hand. And the angel of the Lord stood by the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. And David lifted up his eyes and saw the angel of the Lord stand between the earth and heaven, having a sword drawn in his hand stretched out over Jerusalem. Then David and the elders of Israel, who were clothed in sackcloth, fell upon their faces. And David said unto God, Is it not I that commanded the people to be numbered? Even I it is that have sinned and done evil indeed. But as for these sheep, what have they done? Let thine hand, I pray thee, O Lord my God, be on me and my father's house. Be not on thy people, that they should be plagued. Verse 18, then the angel of the Lord commanded Gad to say to David, that David should go up and set up an altar unto the Lord in the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. And David went up at the saying of Gad, which he spake in the name of the Lord. And Ornan turned back and saw the angel and his four sons with him hid themselves. Now Ornan was threshing wheat. And as David came to Ornan, Ornan looked and saw David and went out of the threshing floor and bowed himself to the ground with his face to the ground. Then David said to Ornan, grant me the place of this threshing floor, that I may build an altar therein unto the Lord. Thou shalt grant it me for the full price, that the plague may be stayed from the people. And Ornan said unto David, take it to thee, and let my lord the king do that which is good in his eyes. Lo, I give thee the oxen also for burnt offerings, and the threshing instruments for wood, and the wheat for the meal offering. I give it all. And King David said to Ornan, nay, but I will verily buy it for the full price. For I will not take that which is thine for the Lord, nor to offer burnt offerings without cost. So David gave to Ornan for the place 600 shekels of gold by weight. And David built there an altar unto the Lord, and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings, and called upon the Lord, and he answered him from heaven by fire upon the altar of burning. And the Lord commanded the angel, and he put his sword again into the sheath thereof. And at that time when David saw that the Lord had answered him in the threshing floor of Ornan, the Jebusite, then he sacrificed there. This was Mount Moriah. This is exactly where Solomon built the temple, on Mount Moriah. Just exactly where David offered these sacrifices. It's also found in 2 Samuel 24, this account, verses 10 to 17. So the temple will sit on Mount Moriah. We want to keep in mind this remnant is going to be between Jehovah's shoulders, between Mount Zion and Mount Moriah. These shoulders speak of strength, which one sits in Judah and one sits in Benjamin. Both Judah and Benjamin speak of Christ. Judah speaks of Christ as the Lion of the tribe of Judah, and Benjamin speaks of the man, Christ Jesus. Now in verses 13 to 17, we see the blessing that Moses prophesied of Joseph. We'll remember Joseph's name means adding, and we read the prophecy back in Genesis 49, 22 to 26. We also want to remember that Joseph, as Mom has brought out in the studies in the life of Joseph, he is the most perfect type of Christ. So we can almost read this as this is Christ. Because of Christ, this is why Israel is blessed. All these blessings that are being spoken or prophesied are to the remnant, which will be brought through the tribulation. And like Joseph, Joseph had to suffer. Remember everything he had to suffer? He was thrown in the pit. He was lied about. He was thrown back in prison. He had to suffer, but then he was exalted. The suffering has to come before the exaltation. In this 13th verse, blessed of the Lord be his land. Now this is regarding the land of Israel. The land right now is very desolate because God is judging them. They did not observe their Sabbaths. So while they're not in the land, though they are going back to the land now, the land is desolate. It's not fruitful like what the Lord intended it to be. Let's turn to Leviticus 26. This was all dependent upon obedience. Because they rejected him, they were put out of the land. Leviticus 26, 3 to 5. And this was this is what would happen if they obeyed. If ye walk in my statutes, verse 3, and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rains in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, and your threshing shall reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time, and ye shall eat your bread to the full, and dwell in your land safely. This is what would happen if they obeyed. Now let's look at Amos 9. And this is the time that we're reading of here in Deuteronomy 33. This is what it's going to be like in the millennium, that one-third is going to experience this. Amos 9 and the 13th verse. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that the plowman shall overtake the reaper, and the treader of grapes him that soweth seed, and the mountains shall drop sweet wine, and all the hills shall melt. And I will bring again the captivity of my people, and they shall build the waste cities, and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards, and drink the wine thereof. They shall also make gardens, and eat the fruit thereof. And I will plant them upon their land, and they shall no more be pulled out of their land, which I have given them, saith the Lord. Let's read this 13th and 14th verse together. Blessed be the Lord, blessed of the Lord be his land, for the precious things of heaven, for the dew, and for the deep that coucheth beneath, and for the precious fruits brought forth by the sun, and for the precious things brought forth by the moon. 13 and 14 here in verse 13, we read of the moisture that the Lord is going to send to bring forth this fruitful field. We see the rain, precious things of heaven, that is rain. Rain is very precious from heaven. And for the dew, when the rain doesn't fall, the dew would fall. And for the deep that coucheth beneath, this speaks of the subterranean waters, the deep whence It speaks of the subterranean waters, the deep whence spring fountains and streams come from. The Lord would, there'd be plenty of water to make this land fruitful. The Lord would provide every bit of moisture that they needed. And only God can do this. Let's look at Psalm 147 and the 8th verse. Psalm 147 and the 8th verse. Let's begin with the 7th. Sing unto the Lord with thanksgiving, sing praise upon the harp unto our God, who covereth the heaven with clouds, who prepareth rain for the earth, who maketh grass to grow upon the mountain. He giveth to the beast his food, and to the young ravens which cry. The Lord provides everything. The will provide everything, every bit of moisture this land of Israel needs to be fruitful. Let's look in Joel 2:23, and this is what it's going to be like. Joel 2 will begin with the 23rd verse. Be glad then, ye children of Zion, and rejoice in the Lord your God, for he hath given you the former rain moderately, and he will cause to come down for you the rains, the former rain and the latter rain in the first. And the floor shall be full of wheat, and the vat shall overflow with wine and oil. Israel will be truly blessed by God. And as you told me, reminded me over the phone this afternoon, that if the nations don't go to the Feast of Tabernacles, he will hold the rain from them. Rain is very, very necessary. That's over in Zechariah 14. Because from rain, you receive moisture for your crops. You also receive water to drink. In verse 17 of Zechariah 14, and it shall be that whoso will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. And if the family of Egypt go not up and not come, they that have no rain, there shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite the heathen that come not up. God is the one who controls the faucet. If he turns the faucet off, you're not going to have anything watered, and you're not going to be watered. You won't have enough water for a drink. As I look in this 14th verse, and for the precious fruits brought forth by the sun, we could liken this to the natural. Yes, the sun brings forth precious fruits. But Mom also gave me another thought this afternoon. The precious fruits of the Spirit that come from the S-O-N, those are from the Lord. And the precious things brought forth by the moon. When the moon is out, it is dark, isn't it? okay? What comes forth in the dark times of our lives, those times are necessary too. Let's read on in verse 15. And for the chief things of the ancient mountains, and for the precious things of the eternal hills, the Lord is going to provide everything, the gold, the silver, all that they need for their existence is going to be provided there in those ancient mountains, and for the precious things in those lasting hills. Those hills are eternal. Lasting in the Hebrew means eternal. For the precious things of the lasting or eternal hill. Let's read verse 16. And for the precious things of the earth and fullness thereof, and for the good will of him, and this is Jehovah, out of his good will, this remnant God will provide for their every need. Why? Because of the suffering that Jesus Christ did on the cross. As we said earlier, the suffering must come before the exaltation. We know in our studies in Genesis that Joseph was separated from his brethren. They meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Had Joseph not been down there, that nation of Israel wouldn't have been born. Let's look at the good will of Jehovah. It says, and for the precious things of the earth and fullness thereof, and for the good will of him that dwelt in the bush. And this is Jehovah. This is speaking of all that Jehovah himself is going to accomplish. Let's turn back to Psalms 104. In Psalm 104, bless the Lord, O my soul. O Lord my God, thou art very great. Thou art clothed with honor and majesty. Who coverest thyself with light as with a garment? Who stretchest out the heavens like a curtain? Who layeth the beams of his chambers in the waters? Who maketh the clouds his chariot? Who walketh upon the wings of the wind? Who maketh his angels spirits, his ministers a flaming fire? Who laid the foundations of the earth, that it should not be removed forever? Thou coverest it with the deep as with a garment. The mountains stood above the mountains. The waters stood above the mountains. At thy rebuke they fled. At the voice of thy thunder they hasted away. They go up by the mountains. They go down by the valleys unto the place which thou hast founded them. Thou hast set a bound that they may not pass over, that they turn not again to cover the earth. He sendeth the springs into the valleys which run among the hills. This is what he does. This is what he has done. Think of who we're reading of. They give drink, these springs, give drink to every beast of the field. The wild asses quench their thirst. By them shall the fowls of the heaven have their habitation, which sing among the branches. He watereth the hills from his chambers. The earth is satisfied with the fruit of thy works. He causeth the grass to grow for cattle and for herb for the labor of man, that he may bring forth food out of the earth, and wine that maketh glad the heart of man, and oil to make his face to shine, and bread which strengtheneth man's heart. The trees of the Lord are full of sap, the cedars of Lebanon which he hath planted. Where the birds make their nests, as for the stork, the fir trees are her house. The high hills are a refuge for the wild goats, and the rocks for the conies. He appointed the moon for seasons. The sun knoweth his going down. Thou makest darkness, and it is night, wherein all the beasts of the forest do creep forth. The young lions roar after their prey, and seek their meat from God. The sun ariseth, they gather themselves together, and they lay down in their dens. Man goeth forth unto his work, and to his labor until the evening. How, O Lord, how manifold are thy works! In wisdom hast thou made them all. The earth is full of thy riches. So is this great and wide sea, wherein are things creeping innumerable, both small and great beasts. The Lord takes care of everything. I think of that song, that he takes care, his eye is on the sparrow. If he can take care of the sparrow, why can't we trust him to take care of us? They toil, I think of that in Matthew, where it says, that the birds don't sow, they don't work for anything, but God provides them everything they need. He provides the material that they use to make their nests. They don't have to go out and bargain for it. God provides it for them. Now let's look at this. Let the blessing come upon the head of Joseph and upon the top of the head of him that was separated from his brethren. We know Christ, who Joseph is a type, was separated from his brethren. We know in John 1:11 that he came unto his own, and his own received him not. They didn't want anything to do with him. Jesus also was separated not only from his brethren, but from the equality he had with his Father. Let's look at Philippians 2. Jesus knew what it meant to be separated. Philippians 2. And he'll never have this equality again because he wanted to come. Philippians 2, let's begin with the 6th verse. Who, being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, because he was equal, but made himself of no reputation and took upon him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. He was separated. He was separated from his Father first. He came down in the form of a baby. Then his brethren wouldn't even accept him. They rejected him. Separation. Joseph knew separation. Jesus knew separation. We should know separation. Separation was done at the cross. Let's look at Galatians 6:14. Our separation, it was at the cross. We should allow the cross to do the separating in our lives. Galatians 6 and the 14th verse. But God forbid that I should glory save in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom the world is crucified unto me, and I unto the world. And I like what Glenn brings out, that it's a double crucifixion. Not only have we been crucified unto the world, but the world's been crucified unto us. We went down into death, Romans 6:4. If we identify that we went down into death with Jesus Christ, we're separated. If by faith we went down into death. Separation is a very important matter in our holy walking with the Lord. Now we are all provisionally sanctified. We were provisionally sanctified when we accepted Jesus as our Savior. But practical sanctification occurs only if we allow Him to separate us from everything that isn't of Him. Let's look at Romans 6. It's as we take our place, death, burial, and resurrection with Christ, and actually live that life, a new creation life, it's going to separate us from things of the old creation. Romans 6 and the 11th verse. Likewise reckon ye also yourselves to be dead indeed unto sin, but alive unto God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body, that ye should obey it in the lusts thereof. Neither yield your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield or present yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead, or a new creation, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. Let's look at John 12:24. John 12:24. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. Separation has to come in order to be spiritually fruitful. That old creation has to go down in the grave. It has to stay there. We have to allow the word to separate that old creation. We have to count it dead every day. And as we do, now let's look at verse 17 of Deuteronomy 33. His glory, now this is Jehovah's glory. His glory is like the firstling of a bullock, of his bullock. And his horns are like the horns of unicorns. With them he shall push the people together to the ends of the earth, and they are the 10,000s of Ephraim and they are the thousands of Manasseh. Glory here speaks his glory. It speaks of God's majesty. Let's look at Psalm. We read Psalm 104. Let's look at Psalm 29:4. This is just his voice. Psalm 29:4. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. Majesty. We've never seen any majesty like what we're going to see when we get to glory. The firstling of his bullock. This speaks of strength and boldness. There's not going to be anything backward about Jehovah. He's going to use every bit of strength, and he's going to be bold in doing it. The horns of a unicorn. His horns are like the horns of unicorn. A unicorn has two horns. This speaks of power. Horns speak of power. The two-horned animal speaks of great strength and veracity. And this is what Jehovah is going to have. With these horns, with them, he shall push the people together to the ends of the earth. This push here means gore, figuratively to war. It's used figuratively of a victor who prostrates the nations before him. And this is what's going to happen. Jesus is going to rule with a rod of iron. Let's look at Psalm 44. Psalm 44, and I would like to begin with the first verse. To the chief musician, who is Christ, for the sons of Korah, Mask, we have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us what work thou didst in their days, in the times of old, how thou didst drive out the heathen with thy hand and plantest them, how thou didst afflict the people and cast them out. For they got not the land in possession by their own sword, neither did their own arm save them, but thy right hand and thine arm and the light of thy countenance, because thou hadst a favor unto them. Thou art my king, O God, command deliverances for Jacob. Through thee we will push down our enemies. Through thy name we will tread them under that rise up against us. For I will not trust in my bow, neither my sword shall save me. But thou hast saved us from our enemies, and hast put them to shame that hated us. Let's look at Jeremiah 10. I like this one. Jeremiah 10, verses 16 to 18. This is contrasting God and idols. The portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the fashioner of all things. And Israel is the rod, or the measuring rod, of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. Gather up thy wares out of the land, O inhabitant of the fortress. For thus saith the Lord, behold, I will sling out. And this, I have a note here, this sling out is like throwing the garbage out. For thus saith the Lord, behold, I will sling out the inhabitants of the land at this once, and will distress them, that they may find it so. Let's look at Revelation 2:27. We know this is how the Lord is going to rule. He's shown grace all through this church age. Well, it's about over. Revelation 2 and the 27th verse. And he shall rule the nations with a rod of iron, as the vessels of a potter shall be broken to shivers, even as I receive of my Father. Let's look at 19:15 of Revelation. And out of his mouth goeth a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations. He shall rule them with a rod of iron, and he treadeth the winepress of the fierceness and wrath of Almighty God. We know that Jesus will rule with a rod of iron through that entire millennium. In verse 17, with these horns he shall push the people together to the ends of the earth, and they are the 10,000s of Ephraim. Ephraim's name means fruitfulness. Manasseh's name means forgetting. The Gentiles must be banished from the land of Israel to make way for the myriad of Ephraims, of the fruitful one, and the thousand of Manasseh. We said earlier that Ephraim and Manasseh, they are in the center of Israel. Jerusalem is going to be the center of the earth. They got the richest land of all of Israel. truly believe it was because Jacob loved Rachel. God honored that.